Welcome to Outreach Church. Thanks for checking out this week's message. To hear more, subscribe to our podcast on iTunes or visit outreachchurch.net for downloads and service information.
Good morning. If that was for you, then take that and let that speak to you. He's always trying to get us when he feels we're at our weakest. And if he thought that Jesus is the best chance that he had to get Jesus to betray who he was when he was alone and isolated and weak, then I would guess that he thinks his best chance at you is when you're alone, isolated, and weak. For that reason, I'm telling you, never find yourself alone, isolated, and weak unless you're led there by the Spirit. When people go into seasons of hiding and calling it a season of being hidden by the Lord, it better be the Lord. Because if it's not, you're making yourself a target for the enemy, and you're cutting yourself off from one of the defenses that we have, which is the community of the bride and the body of Christ. I'm just telling you, like, if he leads you into a wilderness season, you're going to come out on the other side full of the power of the Spirit of God and with revelation. And you look at Jesus, right? It's like he was actually led by the Spirit of God into the wilderness for a time. And he came out in the power of the Spirit and with revelation. If you're out in a wilderness season, we're waiting for you to come back full of the power of the Spirit, full of revelation, and on fire for Jesus. If your wilderness season is leading you somewhere to weaken and die, it's not the Lord that led you there. Run back. I'm just telling you. When you feel that pull to disconnect and disengage from your community, I'm not just talking about here. I'm saying in life, the people that you live life with that are believers, that you know are following Jesus and that wouldn't let you live less than Jesus paid for. And you feel that pull to disconnect and disengage, you just make sure that that's really the Spirit of God leading you there. Yeah? All right, that was free. Turn your Bibles to 2 Corinthians chapter 10. And I want to look at verse 3, 4, and 5, and I really want to focus in on something. I was going to preach the last in the series on Gideon, and I just could not get away from this yesterday. And so I felt like this is where we're supposed to go today. It's a super simple thing, but I think it's a really powerful thing. I guess most of the most powerful things are the most simple things. All right, if it was complicated, I wouldn't get it. I'm thankful that it's simple. It's not always easy, but it's never complicated. Following Jesus isn't always easy. It's not always like, oh yeah, this is so easy, just following Jesus. I mean, in a way it is, because what's the alternative? But when we're following him, sometimes we have to face hard things. Sometimes we have to make hard decisions. Sometimes we have to endure things. Sometimes we have to not give in to things or not do things. Or certain times he may tell you, that's not for you. And you're like, but it's for everybody else. Why not me? They're having so much fun. Yeah, but that's not for you. And then you have to make that choice. Will I follow what I want or will I follow the one who called me? So 2 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 3, Paul's talking to the church in Corinth, and he says, for though we walk in the flesh, we do not war according to the flesh, for the weapons of our warfare are not of the flesh, but divinely powerful for the destruction of fortresses. Your favorite version might say, for the pulling down of strongholds. It's the same thing. We are destroying speculations and every lofty thing raised up against the knowledge of God, and we are taking every thought captive to the obedience of Christ. And he goes on to about ready to punish disobedience when your obedience is full. But I wanted to talk about that tearing down of strongholds or destruction of fortresses. And I was just thinking about this and praying about this. And as I was reading yesterday morning, I came across this and it stopped me. And I went back and reread and I felt like the Lord started speaking. So I did what I do. I pulled my phone out and I either write notes or if I'm driving, I voice memo. I have like 160 sermons on my phone right now that are in various stages. You know, it's crazy. They're all a gospel. They're just different flavors. And so I started really just kind of pressing into this and thinking about it. And what I felt like the Lord was showing me and what I believe Scripture shows us is all a stronghold is a fortified lie. That's it. It's just a lie that's been believed and then reinforced over and over and over again. That's it. It's not some like big, like don't make more of things than they should be. Like anytime something causes you to be in awe of its power over people rather than in awe of the power of Jesus over it, something's off. When we get more impressed with the problem than we do with the answer, something is off. When we give more glory to the problem than we do to the answer, something's off. You know, I always say this because it's true. If we had less answers, we would have less problems. When we have one answer, it really starts to eliminate a lot of problems. And in the church, we like to glorify things sometimes, and I don't think evilly, but I think we just give things a lot more prestige than they should have. And I feel like strongholds has been one of those things where it's like, you know, listen, when I say this, this is not like if God calls you to minister that way, but I've seen people just yelling at strongholds to get torn down and come out and all this stuff. And it's like, man, your volume isn't what impresses the enemy. Your belief is. You look at Jesus. It was really easy for anyone watching to tell which one had a demon. Because one was foaming at the mouth, flopping around and screaming. The other was Jesus. How long has he been like this? Since he was a youth that often seizes him and thrashes him around and tries to put him into the fire and drown him in the water. Come out. Why? Because he understands who he is, he believes he has all authority, and so he doesn't need to raise his voice and match the intensity of the enemy. It's very simple. Come out. He either has the authority or he doesn't. And so a stronghold is a lie that's been reinforced over and over again. So we believe a lie. And then we have experiences, we have circumstances, we have people around us, we have wrong belief, we have misunderstandings, we have all these things that come and just continue to reinforce that lie. But it all started with a lie. The foundation was the lie that we believed. And here's something you have to realize. In order to be deceived, deception has to have a place to land. You're not just a walking target open for deception that can be deceived at the drop of a hat whenever the enemy wants to. You are not powerless against deception. You're not a deception magnet, and it's like, oh, man, I just hope I'm not deceived. It's like, well, you could hope you're not deceived, or you could follow Jesus and be led by his Spirit and yielded to him, and you won't be deceived. But if you're walking in deception, it's because there was some place that that deception had to land, and there was a foundation for that deception to be built upon, and at the bottom of that foundation, every time, there's a lie. There's a belief that isn't true. And it gave those little bricks, like when you start building a house, the very first thing you do is you either use concrete forms, for those of you that aren't in construction here, which is like 8% of the church, especially in Ringe, that's like 9% here and 8% there. We have a lot of business owners and entrepreneurs here that are in the real estate and construction world. Everyone knows when you're building a house, the very first thing you have to do is get the foundation in. So you either excavate dirt until you hit solid ground, however deep you have to go, or you, if you're already on top of solid ground, you form on the top of the ground, and then you pour concrete. And now, when you come in with brick or stone or whatever you're building with, there's a solid foundation that can sit on. There's some place for those bricks to sit. There's some place for those stones to be set. And this is what, like, when it talks about high and lofty things, and it talks about fortresses, we picture this huge fortress. And the truth is like, it didn't get huge in one day. It started out as a small thing. It started out as a foundational thing. It was a lie that was believed somehow, either because somebody lied to you, either because you believed something that wasn't true, or maybe there was something in you that wanted something to be true, and you overlooked truth in your pursuit of what you wanted. Come on, we are oftentimes willing participants in our own deception. James talks about this. He says, where there's selfish ambition, there is every kind of evil. When you're selfishly ambitious, you are wide open to being deceived, because you will latch onto anything that affirms the selfish ambition that is inside of you. I'm just telling you, like, this is not to victim shame, but I'm saying if you've been deceived, you have to check your heart and say, why was I so easily deceived? What was in me that allowed that deception to have such a loud and easy voice in my life? And so when you're building, you get the foundation in, and you got to make sure that the foundation is right. You have to make sure it's level. You have to make sure it's on solid ground, because everything that's built is going to be bearing its weight on that foundation. And if that foundation is off, if that foundation is out of level, the higher it gets, the worse it gets. You could look at a wall when you first lay the first floor base plate down, the bottom of the wall, the 2x4, 2x6, 2x8, whatever you use in a frame, and you could lay that on the foundation, and if you step back and you looked at that wall, you wouldn't really be able to tell it was out of level if it was only off by an inch and 12 feet. You could look at that wall when it's just the base plate, and you wouldn't be able to see it. But you start stacking studs and a top plate, and now you start going, something's not quite right. Build another story on top of it. Build another story on top of it. And pretty soon you're terrified to stand on the leaning side of it because it's going to fall over in your mind. That's what happens. That's why it's so important that our lives are built on truth. And it's not like a one-time thing where it's like, well, my foundation for my life, I'm born again, so the foundation of my life is Jesus. That's awesome. But what about this area of your life over here? Is the foundation solid in that area of your life? What about this area of my life? Is the gospel what this area of my life is built on? Because some of us will build our foundation, build our belief about salvation, eternity, and all that on Jesus, which is good, which is right, which is true, but then build another part of our life on something else. And we're like, well, I'm following Jesus because I repented and I was born again and I made him my Lord and my Savior. And I know that my sin is forgiven and I know that I'm going to heaven. And that's amazing and that's true. But he doesn't just want to be the foundation of your salvation in that one area. He wants to be the foundation of your life in every area. Is your marriage built on the gospel? Are your finances built on the gospel? Are your relationships built on the gospel? Or do you have a solid foundation here and a wonky one there and a sort of wonky one here and that one over there we won't even talk about? Like, the Lord challenges me with this stuff because it's like, man, if I want to say you can have all this world but give me Jesus, then I have to say you can have everything that's not him because I only want him. And that goes for every part of my life. It's not just the one part. It's not just the part that people see. Every area of my life. And I was just thinking, he talks about that the weapons that we have are for the tearing down of strongholds or the destruction of fortresses. And I wrote that down. I wrote, every lofty or high thing doesn't become a high thing in a day. It started on a day. There was a day that it started. There was a day that deception came in, that lie was believed, that hurt and offense was allowed to have root and have a place in the core of who we are to find its way into our heart. And that might have been when it began, but it didn't get built high in a day. It got built high year after year after year, brick after brick after brick after brick. But here's the crazy thing about it. And I was asking the Lord, I'm like, I need a way to explain how this works, because you see it in your own life, you see it in other people's lives, where it's like, yeah, but I mean, like, that thing got huge. How did that many bricks get attached there? And this morning I was praying into that, and he showed me a stream. How many of you ever seen a natural dam in a stream? like a log pile, stick, trash, everything else, right? That stream was running crystal clear until one day a stick came floating down and it found a foothold, a place to lodge, a place to get stuck. It had traveled who knows how far down that stream, and it would have kept going down that stream. It eventually ended up somewhere being deposited. But on this day, that stick that was floating down the stream, it didn't attach there, it didn't attach there, it didn't get caught there, it didn't get caught there. But all of a sudden, for some reason, there was a stone sticking up. The water level was a little bit low maybe, and the stone was sticking up a little bit higher, and that first stick lodged itself. And now all of a sudden, there's a stick there where there once was a clear river. And then the next thing that comes down floats by it, but the next thing that comes down hits it and gets tangled in it. And now you've got two sticks where it used to be a clear, clean stream. And now the next thing that comes down gets caught and tangled, and the next, and the next, and the next. And pretty soon it's jammed, and everything that comes down the stream gets caught there. And now all of a sudden the water starts to become stagnant behind it. And it collects trash, and it collects junk. You look and you're like, I didn't even know there was that much stuff in this river. No, that's because when a river's flowing like it's supposed to, that stuff doesn't build up, it gets washed. You don't see it. You could walk further upstream and you would say, this is a clean river. You could walk to that spot and you'd be like, this is a filthy river. What's the difference? One place had something that attracted everything else, and it became this entanglement over time as everything that came down the river suddenly began to stick in that one place. And when we have a stronghold in our life, when we have a fortress, a place that allows the enemy access and a voice into our life, every single thing eventually will become something that reinforces that stronghold. You'll see it everywhere you look. All right, hold on. I'm going to go back and then I'm going to go forward. I think this is what the Apostle Paul was talking about when he said that, like a wise master builder, I laid a foundation that was Jesus Christ. And no man can build on anything but that foundation. What was he saying? Saying, guys, listen, all I did when I was there was make sure that your foundation was right and that it was built on the gospel of Jesus Christ. Because from there, other people can come and build. But I'm telling you, if that's not right, nothing will be right. And I also think this is what Paul was talking about when he said, don't give the enemy a foothold. Don't give the enemy a footing. Because once there's a footing in your life, then something can be built upon that. Then brick by brick, stone by stone, that fortress can get made bigger and more strong and more massive and have more voice and have more place. And I see it and I'm like, God, I don't want to have any place in my life for anything but the gospel of Jesus. I don't want to have a landing strip for deception. I don't want to have a landing strip for offense. I don't want to have a landing strip for anything that makes me live less than Jesus died for me to live. Because if truth makes me free, lies make me bound. If the truth sets me free, then lies bind me up. I don't want to be bound. I don't want to be mastered. I don't want to be stuck and entangled. I don't want to be a landing strip for everything that happens for me to have a place in my heart for that to come. I don't want to live that way. I want to be free. I want the same stick that got caught down there floats right through my life. There's no attachment to me. There's no place for it to get stuck. There's no place for it to accumulate. There's no place for it to grab onto the next thing and the next thing and the next thing, and then pretty soon I'm stagnant. I want that stuff to just flow right on through. In one ear, out the other. Well, did you hear what they said? I don't care what they said if it wasn't true. But they said this about you. That's okay. If they knew who they were, they would be able to see who I am. The fact that they're saying that means they're lost. That's not me. I'm not taking that. And I'm certainly not going to become hurt and offended by that and become the product of what they said or didn't say to me when I hear and see what Jesus said and did for me. Why would I give that more authority than him? Why would I allow someone's brokenness to have more influence over who I am than the one who became broken on my behalf and resurrected me into wholeness of life? All right. I was thinking about Gideon because I was like, but I told them I was going to finish this series, and I will at some point. I did say I think. It's like me doing this. I think. But I was thinking about Gideon, and I was thinking about the stronghold in his life. I'm weak. I'm from the weakest tribe. He's believed this lie that he is the product of the family that he comes from. I'm the smallest, and my family is the smallest. In other words, I don't know that I can be who you say that I am because the family I come from. You hear this when you talk to people. Well, you know, this just runs in my family. Well, maybe. But it doesn't have to. For one, you have a new family. You have a new father. You have a new bloodline. You are now a brother or a sister of Jesus. This is why I can't, I've talked about this before, but every time I get around this subject, I feel like I need to repeat it for people who haven't heard it. I can't stand when we minister to people who are born again that they're under generational curses. How could you be under a generational curse when generational curses are found in the Old Testament? It says the sin of the father will be visited upon the second and the third generation. Okay, so that was true in the Old Covenant before you could be born again. But you're born again. And you're no longer a descendant of the first Adam. You are now the product of the obedience of the second Adam. And I think Jesus knew that we would be tempted to go that route, so he made sure to let us know, call no earthly man your father, for you have one who is your father, and he is in heaven. So if the power of a generational curse is that the sin of my father is passed down to the second and the third generation, and he is my father, how many curses are coming my way because of the sin of my father? None, except for the ones that I believe and give place to. And now I've got a stronghold of my own making because I believe the lie that's contrary to Scripture, and I've opened myself up to deception, and I live actively under the weight of that deception, and it might as well be true because I've said it's true for me. I promise you, the minute you stop agreeing with that lie, its power over you is broken. The minute you believe truth, that's why it's so important that we know the truth, because that's what sets us free. Someone could pray for you every single day at the altar for this generational curse to be broken. If you don't believe that you're not cursed because of the sin of your father, but are blessed because of the righteousness of Jesus and the obedience of Jesus, it's not leaving. Because it's not there from your father, it's there from your unbelief and your wrong belief. That lie has allowed that foundation to be set, and then the rest of your life, every single stick that comes down has a place to land. So when something doesn't go right, or you make a bad decision, or you make a wrong choice, well, that's because of, and it's like, man, at some point we gotta stop giving more credit to our father than we do to our father. And that's just one example. And listen, I don't think people that minister that stuff have evil, wicked hearts. I think they believe a lie. I think they're just passing on what's been taught to them. I'm telling you right now, is there anyone in here right now that you actively came into this room believing that you are under a generational curse? Anybody? Don't be ashamed if you are. Like, it's that fast. Yeah? Okay. Well, I'm glad I preached it. If there's anyone in Ringe right now that's listening to this, if you believe this, let me just tell you, look, I want to just talk straight to you. I could pray for you, but that wouldn't change you, because everyone else that prayed for you didn't change you. I can't change you. The truth can. Jesus became the curse on your behalf, for it is written, cursed is every man, hold on, who hangs upon a tree. He became every curse that was coming your way, not just for the sin of the people who lived before you, but for the sin that you would commit. He became your sin so that you might become the righteousness of God in Christ Jesus. Are you born again? You're a new creation. All things have passed away, and the new has come. You have won. Call no earthly man your father. That doesn't mean you don't honor your dad. I honor mine. I love him to death. But I'm not expecting my life to be the product of what he did. I'm expecting my life to be the product of what my Father in heaven did for me. That's what Jesus is talking about when he says, call no earthly man your father, for you have one who is your father, and he is in heaven. Oh, and by the way, he's perfect, never sinned, blameless. Here's the other thing. If we quote that, and you have to go back two or three generations to try to find the sin, why don't we just quote, and the blessing of righteousness is to 1,000 generations to them that believe. Certainly somewhere in the 1,000 generations in your past, somebody believed. But I just want to tell you that, and I want to tell whoever's listening to me in Ringe or whoever's watching right now, wherever you're at, you do not have to live under a curse because broken people did broken things in your family's lineage. You don't search your family tree to find out what's wrong with you. You look to the one who hung upon a tree to find what's right. I promise you that. And if, listen, you might have seen things might have been modeled, it might have been easier for you to fall into certain patterns because of what you were taught and what you were exposed to, and all that stuff's real. I'm just telling you, the answer isn't to try to go back and figure out what someone else did that made you wrong. The answer is to look to the one who gave his life for you to be free. And who he sets free is free indeed. Come on, that's the truth. I remember I started preaching that like 10, 12 years ago, and it was like I'd ask that question, half the hands would go up. Because, man, that stuff was prevalent. But you know what? The gospel is prevalent. The gospel is being preached. I promise you, truth is coming. And again, if somebody ministered that stuff to you, there's no animosity towards that. They just were giving the best that they knew. But what we can't do is continue in error when we see the truth. We're responsible, yeah, to live in the truth when the truth comes. We walk in the light as he is in the light. I was thinking about Gideon, and I was thinking about this stronghold that he had, and I'm how could I be what you say? How could that be true? I'm from this family, and I'm the smallest, I'm the weak, all this stuff, and da, da, da. And then I realized, I'm like, man, he had this stronghold, he had this fortress inside of him. And I was thinking about how many people want to go out and destroy the work of the enemy out there without allowing God to destroy the work of the enemy in here. So what did he do? He spoke truth to Gideon that replaces the lie. What was he doing? He's saying, Gideon, I'm going to tear down that wrong belief you have about yourself by telling you the truth. And Gideon, if you'll believe it, if you believe it, Gideon, if you believe it, if you'll let what I said about you be what you believe rather than what others have said or even what you've said about you, then all of a sudden now you have a new fortress that's being built. And it's the one that I will say of the Lord, he is my fortress and my strength. Because what's inside of you, that's your fortress, your refuge that you run to, will be the truth that I've spoken over you. So when you're tempted to feel afraid, Gideon, you'll have this fortress inside of you that's built on my word that you retreat into, and you can't be afraid anymore because I'm there with you. But he had to make sure that Gideon had the lie tore out of him and truth replaced before he could send him to his father's house to tear down the lie and replace it with the altar of God. Think about it. Gideon is literally destroying a lofty, high fortress that has been built to Baal. He's tearing it down. And God didn't just say, tear it down. God said, tear that down and build an altar to me. Tear out the lie, but rebuild it with truth, Gideon. And you do that first in your heart, then you're capable of being someone who can do that for others. So I was thinking about how this happens practically, and I was thinking about, like, I just want to give you a practical example of how one lie can lay a foundation that many bricks can be set on. And it's crazy how it happens. Like, literally, some of the things that when you're talking to people or that you've believed, you're like, how did I, like, when you're out of it, you look back and you're like, how could I have heard this said and believed that? Like, you literally are like, it's, you don't even understand yourself. But when you're in it, when that lie is there, when that stronghold is there, it becomes the lens that you see, view, and hear and feel everything through. So, like, if someone struggles with insecurity, Like, I'm not enough, or I'm overlooked. And they believe that lie because their identity isn't found in Jesus Christ. Their identity isn't found in the fact that God thought that they were worth the blood of his son, Jesus Christ, and that he willingly paid Jesus's life in exchange for mine. If that's not the core of what I believe about my value and my worth, and I start to believe I'm not worthy, I'm not good enough, I don't measure up, I'm overlooked, and I'm insecure, all of a sudden, because that foundation is there, there's a place for all these different bricks to get settled. There's a place for them to land. It's like that's the stick that allows the other sticks to stick to it. And pretty soon the dam gets built up and everything gets stagnant. So it's like you know, when you're living that way and you get around someone confident, all of a sudden they're arrogant. They're arrogant because they are confident and I'm insecure, but I don't realize that because of my insecurity, I'm seeing their genuine confidence as something that's a problem. And it's like they're arrogant. They think they're better than me. Like literally, people will tell you, like, oh, you think you're better than me. It's like, why would you ever say that? What have I ever done that makes you think that I think I'm better than you? I don't think I'm better than you. I think we're all the same in the eyes of God. Every valley high, every mountain low, like the blood of Jesus made us all equal. There's nothing there's nothing in my heart. And I don't think I've ever said that. Well, yeah, but I can just tell you think you're better than me. No. You think you're worse than me because you're insecure. And so now, rather than dealing with your insecurity, you have to find something wrong with the person that makes you feel that way. And it's crazy how that happens. Oh yeah, they just think they're better than everyone. No, you think they're better than you because you're not confident in who he's made you to be. And so you judge them out of your own projection because of the stronghold and the lie of insecurity in your life. Someone succeeds. Oh yeah, but they must be doing something wrong. They must be cheating somehow. Because anybody that succeeds where I've failed must be doing something wrong because I do everything right. And if I didn't get the result they got, well, then obviously there's something wrong with what they're doing. It couldn't be me. They must be doing something wrong. Maybe not. Maybe you attack their character because you feel inferior, and the only way that you could feel better about yourself was to find what was wrong with them. It happens. Meanwhile, you have no idea they think that. You were just sharing a testimony, a praise report, something that God did. And you walked away and they're like, well, I'll tell you right now. It happens. Another brick in the wall. Someone gets blessed. Well, they got that because I didn't. Because I'm overlooked and I'm inferior, that means that anything anyone else gets came at my expense. They obviously got that because I didn't, because that nothing ever goes right for me, because I'm always overlooked, because I never get favor, because, and you have a belief system that attracts that stuff, and you see it everywhere you look. It's like no one has ever been blessed by God at anyone's expense but God's. The faster we learn that, the more content we'll become. It's not pie. He's not in heaven with a limited amount, and what he gives to one person depletes his ability to do for another. He has plenty, I promise. Nobody ever got at your expense. Everybody always got at Jesus's. How about this? You overhear someone compliment somebody on something you were a part of. Man, that was amazing. You did such a good job with that. They don't think I did a good job. No, they just felt like they should tell that person, or they just recognized that person as someone who was involved with it. Maybe they didn't see you. Maybe they didn't know you were involved. And why do you need them to know that you were involved? Anyway, I thought you were doing this for the Lord. Well, after everything I've done, you would think, well, you've just proved why you've done everything you've done, because you feel that they owe you now. So was that really you laying your gifting down and your life down and sacrificing, or was that you performing a service to where there's a debt owed afterwards? Like, that's how skewed our lens can get and our vision can get and our hearing can get, that we could hear someone say, it's like someone saying, like, you know, man, I just love mangoes. Why do you hate oranges? It's like, I can't believe you hate oranges. I never said I hate oranges. Well, you said you like mangoes. You didn't say you like oranges. It's like, holy smokes, simmer down. Maybe I just really love mangoes, so I said I love mangoes. Maybe tomorrow if I ate an orange in the morning, it was really good, I might say I like oranges, but me saying I like mangoes doesn't mean I hate oranges. Me telling them they did a good job doesn't mean I don't think you did. But this is what happens. When that foundation is there, it's a landing strip with lights and flagmen guiding that stuff in, saying, come on in. The air traffic controller, the enemy, speaking constantly from his little fortified position that you've given him in your life and constantly pointing out every single thing so that you notice every little thing the wrong way, so that you continue to build that fortress, you continue to build that stronghold, and then all you know is what, how to hear and how to see through that lens, that stronghold. And none of it's true. None of it. It's all because a lie got in, was allowed to stay, and became a foundational place for a fortress to be built upon. Stone after stone, brick by brick. And you know what's crazy? The enemy will send contractors along to help build your wall. Now he will. Just look at Elijah. Think about it. Elijah has probably one of the most amazing days that any man has ever had in the history of the world in one day. Like, if we did one of the things that Elijah did in our whole life, we would write a book about it and have speaking fees and green room riders and everything else too. We'd write a book. If you supernaturally raced a chariot down a mountain and beat it, you'd write a book. You'd at least make a YouTube video. If you called down fire to consume a wet altar, you'd write a book. Even if you didn't want to, people would want you to, because everybody would want the formula, because everybody would want to do the thing that you did. But nobody would want to do the thing you did that got to that point. Everybody would want to know the magic spell. What words you have to say in that moment that caused the thing that everybody saw without realizing it was all the things that everybody didn't see that put you in the position to say that in faith and God honor it. It happens. I'm just saying, not here, not in America and the church today, but you can imagine it's happened over the years. If you destroyed 400 prophets of Baal in a day, you'd write a book. If you prophesied that the drought that you prophesied was going to happen was coming to an end, and it happened. Like, if you did any one of those things, that would be like a life pinnacle, like seminal point in your life. And he does every one of those things in one day. And yet he has this belief in him that I'm the only one. And I'm no better than my fathers. Because Jezebel speaks and says, basically, within 24 hours, I'm going to have you killed. Within 24 hours, it will be done to you as you did to the prophets. And he hears her threat. You would think after all of that stuff happening, if he heard that, he'd be like, pfft. You would think it would just wash right down the river. You'd think that stick would still be floating. But there was a snag. There was a place for it to land. And it was the lie. I'm the only one left, and I'm no better than my fathers. This is what happens to my family, and it's happening to me again. And he runs, and he lays down under a bush and wants to die. What happens? The Lord sends a messenger to speak to him. Why? Why didn't God just anoint Elijah in that moment? I mean, honestly, just think about God's response in this moment. I'm not saying there's not times where he anoints people, but when someone has a problem with believing a lie that's hindering them from walking in the life he called them to, his answer isn't to anoint them and make them an anointed, dysfunctional person with a stronghold. That's not what he did. No, he sent a messenger to him to dig out the lie and tell him the truth, so that he would stop believing the lie, so that from this point on, that lie will never have a voice again, so that the next stick that comes floating down the river doesn't have a place to lodge anymore. The stream's flowing once again. The water's no longer stagnant. Every piece of trash coming down isn't collecting there and becoming part of his story. So he sends it to him, and the Lord says, not, Elijah, I anointed you. Or, Elijah, shandalahaya, get up. He doesn't do that. I'm not saying there's not a place for that kind of stuff. I'm saying that's not what he does when someone is believing a lie that's causing them to lay down and want to die under the threat of the enemy. He says, Elijah, I've reserved for myself a bunch of prophets. Haven't you heard? What's he saying? Elijah, if you keep believing that lie, you're going to keep believing the threats. You're going to let everything that comes be like another stick in the pile. And you don't need someone to come and pray for you right now, Elijah. You need to believe truth. You need to hear me speak, and you need to believe truth. And if you believe it, Elijah, it will change your life. And you'll run and not grow weary. You'll walk and you won't faint. This is Elijah. Here's the problem. He doesn't say, don't worry about Jezebel. Why? He's not even concerned with the enemy. Because the enemy isn't the problem. The enemy's always going to speak. If his answer is to shut Jezebel up, well, there's going to be another Jezebel. If the answer is to cut that person out, there's always going to be another person. Well, they said something to me that I didn't like, and it's like, okay, well, then what happens the next time someone says something you don't like? Maybe you should fix what's in you and let him deal with that, so that the next time somebody says something you don't like, your response looks more like Jesus than Elijah. Just go run away underneath a little hill. Hide under a tree. God's like, I didn't create you for you to hide under trees and wish that you were dead, Elijah. I created you to speak the words that I give you to speak and to do what I created you to do. So I'm not going to just shut Jezebel up, because there will always be another Jezebel. I'm going to fix the reason that Jezebel has such a place of influence when she speaks, so that 1,000 Jezebels could speak and it wouldn't change you. That's what he wants to do in us. And I want to encourage us as a church family. Look, this isn't a witch hunt. Like, I'm not saying, all right, you need to start doing a witch hunt, anything, but if there's a repetitive thing that keeps popping up in your life, or there's something that you just can't seem to find freedom from, or you have this filter where, you ever notice two people could hear the same thing and one person walks away happy and the other person walks away angry? That's a stronghold. That's a distorted way of hearing and seeing, or a lack of truth that even if they meant it bad. I always tell people this. I'm like, look, if someone says something to you and you could take it one of two ways, and one makes you happy and one makes you angry, choose the one that makes you happy. That way, even if they were trying to make you angry, they become your encourager. Like, I had people say stuff to me and I'm pretty sure they meant it as a dig, and I'm like, thank you so much. Because I'm just going to choose to take it the best way. Why? Well, for one, a kind word turns away anger. So when I respond with kindness, if they were coming with anger, it turns it away. But for two, I'm not leaving there with their crap. I'm leaving there with their encouragement, whether they like it or not. And there's nothing they can do about it. I'm sorry, Mom. I said that word again in church. I tried to explain to her. Paul used an even worse word when he talked about his righteousness being as dung. She wasn't going for it. I haven't said it since then until just now, and I'm sorry. Man. Okay, sweet. Um, Let's see. Oh, we got so much time. I think specifically, I just want to speak to some people that you've said, well, this runs in my family. I'm not saying you think it's a generational curse. I think that you just are okay or almost feel like it's inevitable for certain things to happen because it runs in my family. Well, you know, divorce runs in my family. No, divorce ran in your family until it got to you. At some point, someone has to live redeemed. At some point, someone has to say, not in my family. I can't change what has happened, but I can surely change what happens next. And I can start a new in my family saying that looks like Jesus rather than looks like hell. Yeah. If that's you and you've period. If when I'm talking today, because here's the thing, just like the enemy will hire subcontractors to come help build the wall, God will send subcontractors to come and help tear down the wall. It'll be someone speaking truth to you in love, telling you that's not true. That's not who you are. That's not what Jesus said. That's not why he died. Those kind of things to you. If while I've been talking, you feel like, man, I can see some of that in my life. I'm always overlooked. I always get done wrong. Nothing ever goes right for me. Well, just in my family. I mean, you hear people say, like, well, you know, obesity just runs in my family. I might step on some toes here. I'm just telling you, you do not have to live with a condition, a physical condition that supposedly runs in your family, even if it ran in your family. You don't. And a lot of times the answer isn't prayer. The answer is self-control. The answer is different choices. We would need a lot less prayer for healing if we would just eat a little bit more broccoli. And people get mad at me when I say that, and they're like, so you're saying that we shouldn't pray for, no, I pray for the sick, but I'm just telling you right now, you're not gonna be around to pray for the sick if you don't make choices that are healthy now that impact your life. It's just the truth. Like, God created our bodies to run a certain way. And I'm not like, I'll preach a sermon on it sometime, but I'm just telling you right now, you were not created to walk around feeling out of shape, unhealthy, and sick constantly. You were not created that way. And I know people get really, some people will probably get bothered by this. I'm just telling you, like, sometimes it doesn't come down to the attack of the enemy, it comes down to the choices we make. Self-control is a gift of the Spirit. It's not a human effort. Submit it to Him and see if it doesn't change. Please don't take that harshly. I see it in my own life. I see the results of choices I make. I see the results of choices I don't make. There's nothing spiritual in the sense of like, well, that was an attack of the enemy. It's like, no, that was an attack of Debbie Cakes. All right, I gotta reel it in. I gotta reel it in. Don't you dare quote me on that anywhere. All right, why don't you guys stand up? Oh, I had to say that right before we go downstairs to the Sunday social and eat donuts. Now we're going to have a ton of leftover donuts. No, listen, there's no shame. Eat your donut. One donut isn't the difference. Just make sure you don't eat eight, and tomorrow you don't eat eight. Or maybe you do, but whatever, do you. I'm leaving. I'm just going home. No, I'm not. I promise. Listen, just real quickly, and then Luke Black's going to come up and just share a quick update with us on what's been going on in Africa. You can come up now with Luke if you want. We have a mic for him. But I do want to just encourage you with this. There is nothing coming your way from upstream that has to stay if you can't find it in the Father or in Jesus. It's just the truth. You can give it a footing. That's why Paul said, don't give the enemy a foothold. He can't take one, but he'll take every one you give. There's nothing that has to be in your life that Jesus paid for you to be free from. Nothing. It's just the truth. And this isn't a witch hunt. It's not like, oh, I got to start figuring out. No, God's faithful to bring stuff up. He really is. If in humility we actually humble ourselves and say, Father, I keep running into this. Show me what's wrong. What am I believing that's given this a place to land? What am I not believing that's given this a place to land? You don't have to witch hunt. He's faithful. He'll show you. I remember one time, real quick story. I was at my house, and I've killed a bunch. I'm like a copperhead slayer, and I actually love snakes. Non-venomous get a free pass. I'll catch them, put them in our wood pile. I want them to stay, but venomous snakes, they get the shovel. And so I was walking in my yard. I saw a copperhead, and I went over and cut its head off, and I went and got a mason jar, put it in the mason jar, and brought it inside and was showing the kids and showing Patty, and then I went and threw it in the dumpster. And the next day, I was walking in my yard. This was years and years ago. I was walking in my yard, and right near where I had killed the other one, there was a copperhead laying there. I went over looking at it, and I realized it was dead. Its head had been smashed. I was like, what the heck? I chopped the head almost off the one I killed, and I put it in a mason jar and threw it in the dumpster. So I went and got a shovel and I scooped it up and I'm walking it over to the dumpster. I open up the dumpster, I dump it in, I look, and sure enough, there's the one I killed the other day. And I was standing there just puzzled by this. And I heard the Lord say, Roy, if you'll be faithful to kill the ones you see, I'll be faithful to kill the ones you don't. Listen, the gospel will destroy strongholds that you don't even know are there if you believe it. You don't have to witch hunt, but if the Lord shows you something, deal with it.